Yeah, sounds good. And welcome to another episode of the Philly Sports Passion Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Lutz, with showrunner and co-host Eric Jacinto. We're running for the Philly Sports Passion website. Eric, it's good to be back again.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm very good.
Good. So the Phillies, through the first 46 games of the season, after getting numerous players in the offseason, either by way of trade or free agency, are in first place by several games. Coming in today was 2.5-game lead in the NL East standings over the Braves. Phillies came in today at 27-19. Braves were 25-22, and the Mets and Nats are trailing them. Obviously, you get the big free agency signing in Harper. I know we discussed some of this the last couple of shows. And obviously you had Segura and then Robertson and McCutcheon. Yeah, some of the other guys as well. So, and then obviously you move Hoskins back to his natural position at first. With all that being said, are you surprised that they're in first place? The fact that it's almost 50 games into the season, you know, or do you think they're kind of where they should be, or do you think they should be better? Where do you see them as an indicator as far as, you know, what you predicted coming into the season?
I think they can be better. I think they haven't played their best baseball yet. I don't think anybody in our division has played their best yet. Maybe the Braves are right now, but I think this is going to be a two-team race. I didn't expect the Braves to be this kid. I thought it was going to be the Nationals, to be honest. In my predictions, I had the Nationals in second and not the Braves. But it's still a long season. The Nationals still can come back up. They're too talented not to be good.
Yeah.
And the Mets are.
Yeah. A lot of people, despite the loss of Harper and maybe some other guys, you know, injuries aside, a lot of people still had the Nationals making the playoffs. Coming into the year, coming into the season, now with their three NL East teams could make the playoffs realistically just because of the new, I say new, but compared to,
yep.
You know, back with the last time the Phillies made the playoffs, they didn't have this new wild card system. So my question to you is, despite the loss of Harper, do you foresee the Nationals by August, September, late September, do you see them being in the playoff hunt, and do you see them making the playoffs?
I think once they get everybody healthy and once they start hitting, I think they can go on a little tear, and I think they can still be in a wild card race. I think they're going to pass the Mets. I think the Mets are starting to collapse, but again, it's early, but it's a Mets, so I don't want to. It's a New York Mets, so they got swept by the Marlins this weekend.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's true. So anything can happen, especially with injuries. You know, you see some guys go down, and Mets have been plagued with injuries. You know, the last 5, 6, 7 years, as long as I can remember, and you know, even after the Phillies, you know, reigned over the NL East. And as we speak now, the Phillies are in Chicago in Wrigley, losing 1-0 on a 2-hit shutout by Yu Darvish from the Cubs. Anthony Rizzo has a RBI, and Jake Arrieta is facing his old team. The Phillies pitching has been kind of strange. For the first time, yeah, that too. That's another thing. So that's something to look out for. It's a, you know, a pitcher's duel so far. And we've gotten some weird weather lately, obviously, on the East Coast. You know, Phillies have had some home games, and, you know, we've been unfortunate. We've had a lot of rain, and then lately we've gotten a lot of humidity. It went from, like, 50s and 60s and rainy to, like, 90. So my point there is, you know, Aaron Nola, who really hasn't been himself so far despite his record, you know, fought through some rain delays. But going back to Jake Arrieta facing his old club tonight, coming into the game, he's 4-4. Don't always look at the win-loss record, you know, because it's a team game. But 4.02 ERA and 9 starts for Arrieta coming into tonight. And he's averaged almost 8.5 hits allowed per 9 innings. Do you think the Phillies made a mistake by going out and getting him just because he was injured last year? He had, you know, several years ago in 2015 with the Cubs, he was 22-6 with a sub-2 ERA and won the NL Cy Young Award. He had a pretty good year, and next year is an all-star with Chicago. But really since then, the last 2.5 years, Arrieta really, injuries aside, really hasn't been himself. 28-25 since 2017 with a 3.79 ERA. Do you think it was a mistake getting Arrieta in the market that we did?
No, because I think we needed an ace. We needed a veteran that's been there and done that before. And I think at the time, I think it was a solid signing. No, nobody can predict injuries and whatnot. I think he had a good start to the season. And then last, what, 3-4 starts, he's back to Jacob last year. So he's been up and down so far this year. He's doing okay tonight. Only allowed one run so far. He's gotten out some jam. He got out of a basically loaded jam in the second inning. So I think he's been solid.
Yeah, but coming into tonight, his last two starts, both of which have been losses. One versus a pretty good Milwaukee team. And then another at Kansas City. He didn't go past the sixth inning in either start, and he allowed 4 innings in each. So, and only once this season in 9 starts, not including tonight, has he gone past the seventh inning. So the pitching's been kind of weird. There's some guys like Arrieta. I know Arrieta has some postseason experience. I know he's 33 and you know, he's been around in the big leagues for quite some time now, but for almost a decade to be exact. But he has some postseason experience, like you mentioned. I won a World Series ring a few years ago with Chicago, and he's been pretty good in the postseason. So you wonder what, you know, what he could do in the postseason. You know, if we make a run this year. Let me stick with pitching real quick, and I kind of mentioned him briefly. Coming into the year, he was our ace, but he's kind of been bumped down a little bit. But Aaron Nola, despite a 4-0 start to the season and pitching through some rain delays, 4.47 ERA. He hasn't had a whole lot of innings. The one big thing he had, though, his strikeouts have been good. 10.3 strikeouts per 9. I know sometimes it's mechanics. Sometimes, like I mentioned, it's bad luck, whether it be rain or whatever it may be. But obviously he came off of an excellent breakout year last year with a ERA at 2.37. What are your thoughts on Nola this year? I know you still have two-thirds of the season to play. Do you think it's mechanics? Do you think it's just something small or just a bad start to the season?
I think it's just a little bad luck to the season. I think his last start, he showed improvement, and I think just like Harper, they're both coming along. I think they both needed to get the early kinks out of them, and just as the weather warms up, both of them are starting to heat up. And I think as Nola goes, I think the pitching staff goes. But Zach Eflin and Eifert have been really the sparks of the pitching staff this year so far. So
yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting about Harper is traditionally in April and March, in his career, he's been pretty good, .298 batting average, an OPS of over 1,000, and, you know, put up some good numbers, averaging a little over, you know, 30 home runs in the month of April/March in his career. Harper's, we'll kind of segue into him a little bit. He's had an interesting Philly start, and you know, recently he's seemed to be picking up. He's had multi-hit games in a sweep versus Colorado at home. He had a grand slam. He had that huge bomb to Ashburn Alley. He had another home run
yesterday.
You know, yesterday near the bullpen, and everybody went nuts. And you know, so far this year, you know, he's putting up 9 home runs, 31 RBIs, 34 walks. But coming into the game tonight at Wrigley, .235 batting average for Harper, .371 on base percentage, and an OPS of .847. What are your thoughts on Harper so far? A lot of people are making a big deal. I know, you know, some people we know that have been talking about it, and some people I've seen on other people's statuses or in the news that have been making a big deal about the amount of strikeouts. He's had 62 strikeouts in 202 plate appearances coming into tonight's game. One, I want to get your thoughts on Harper's start to the season, and two, do you make a big deal about the strikeouts, the amount of strikeouts he's had? I want to get your opinion on that. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't make too much of the strikeouts. He's a power hitter, so he's going to strike out. At least I think he's trying too hard to hit home runs, and I think he needs to settle down and just drive the ball instead of trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark all the time. And I think he's starting to see that, and once he gets going, I think he's going to carry our lineup. Like, I think as he goes, the lineup goes too. So he's similar to Nola. If those two get hot, I think those two can carry us in the season.
Yeah,
so.
Honestly, you know, with Harper, and you know, people mention that he's not clutch, but if you look at like his career stats, with men on base in his career, he has batting average right around 300, .295 batting average in his career with men on base. With runners in scoring position, he has an on-base percentage of over 400. So this is a guy that's going to come around. It's just, you know, it gets magnified because of his contract, but somebody else was going to pay him that money. So it was kind of like, it kind of reminded me of Ryan Howard's contract. And I think Howard was a little bit more overpaid than Harper was. I think Harper is, you know, more of a, I don't want to say five-tool player, but he has more tools to him. You know, he's a better fielder, obviously different positions, but, you know, if you kind of understand what I'm going with there. But, you know, people are, you know, evaluating Harper by his contract, but they're not evaluating by a 162-game, you know, stretched-out season. You know, obviously, you know, he's going to have some games on the road. He's going to have some games where he faces better pitching, some games in Colorado where obviously the conditions are a little bit easier, and then he's going to have, you know, some games that are the total opposite of that. You know, he's in high leverage situations, you know, he's been a consistent performer, like a 270, 280 hitter. He's not going to hit for his career, you know, he's not going to be a 320, 330 consistent hitter. He's really only done that once, 330 in his MVP year. I know he did it in 2017, but that was an injury-plagued season. But outside of that, yeah, he's usually hit around, you know, 270, 270. 275. Yeah, exactly. So within that range, what do you expect him to hit this year? Do you see him hitting right around 250, or do you see him – because he hit 249 last year, and he struck out 169 times with Washington last year, but he led the league in walks, and he had over 30 home runs and 100 RBIs. But from a batting average standpoint, where do you see him – where do you see Harper falling this year by the end of September?
Maybe about – maybe 260. I think he can get to about 260, 270. I think he can get to about his career average. And I think he's going to draw a lot of walks this year because I think pitchers are going to start pitching around him, even though Hoskins is behind him and JT is behind him. I think because you have Segura in front of him, so when this lineup gets going, it's gonna be one of the best lineups in baseball. Because you have up and down the lineup. You have Segura who's sitting over 300. And you have Hoskins who's having a, I guess you can say, a career year so far. Behind him, he has, what, 11 home runs already? And 30-plus RBIs?
Yeah, he's been very productive when he's, you know, especially with I'm not sure what his numbers are with runners in scoring position, but he definitely seems more relaxed and more in tune with his natural ability and just more, you know, overall comfortable. Hoskins, that is, now that he's back at first, he was just a fish out of water. But one thing I do want to say about Harper, he will put the ball in play at Citizens Bank Park. Obviously, in his career, when you break it down by ballpark, he has the most home runs, obviously, at Nationals Park in Washington with 93. But Citizens Bank Park, he has the second most home runs currently in his career out of any ballpark with 20. But interestingly enough, at CBP, Harper for his career, 78 games, 276 career at-bats coming into tonight at Citizens Bank Park, but only a 246 batting average. And not a particularly impressive on-base percentage, 363. I think he'll, you know, continue to get comfortable as time goes on. Obviously, you know, the contract, doesn't run out until 2032. So he's here for the next 13 years. And, you know, he didn't want an opt-out clause. He's a guy that, you know, when you give,
he's very loyal.
But when you give him the opportunity, you know, he puts the ball in play. He, you know, honestly, I don't really overvalue strikeouts because it's another out. You know, if he hits around 270, 280, and if he hits 40 home runs, and if he, you know, puts in the amount of walks that he's capable of, which, by the way, he leads the league in walks this year. I know he leads the league in strikeouts, but it's worth mentioning, you know, one if you're going to mention the other coming into tonight. So we just mentioned him a second ago, but Rhys Hoskins, who's back at first, 11 home runs coming into tonight's game, 36 RBIs, 261 batting average, 382 on-base percentage, which actually leads the starting lineup, and he's also leading the lineup in OPS as well. What are your thoughts at him, one, being at his natural position back at first rather than left field, and two, just the season that Hoskins had so far?
I think the first base is the perfect spot for him, and I think he could be one of the top first basemen in the National League. Okay, besides Paul Goldsmith and Anthony Rizzo, I think he's probably a top 3, top 5 first baseman, and I could see him make the All-Star team this year. Probably not as a starter, because that's probably gonna go to Goldsmith. I could see him as a backup first baseman this year in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Obviously,
How
you're
many
gonna
home runs do you think
have
he'll hit?
Harper.
Yeah,
He has 11
they're
now. I think he
you
can
think he'll
hit
end up
40
with
plus.
40?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
Harper just
he
threw
first.
somebody at home plate.
Yeah, for his first career, he's averaged over 40 home runs. I see him as a Jim Thome type of guy. He's not particularly great as a defensive first baseman, but he has power. He'll hit around 250, 260. But the big thing will be the walks, because he had 87 walks last year, which is, decent, not great. He struck out a fair amount of times, but his batting average was pretty poor. I would like to see him, get into like the 270s. He's not a guy that's going to hit for average, but they really missed Gene Segura, who, the team was a below 500 team in the games when Segura was out. I really think that he bolsters, really adds a boost to the top of the lineup, hitting
Oh, yeah.
322, so far this year, and he's not going to draw a ton of walks, but he kind of
You
reminds
get
me
some
of,
base.
it kind of reminds me of a, some of the guys we had in the 90s who, like a Lenny Dykstra who, had the just the overall
Swagger.
the play the whole swagger is what kind of draws me to him. So he's really impressed me. So, it's been pretty interesting, but I think the most impressive starting pitcher has been Eflin, Zach Eflin, who's led the starting staff in the ERA, 5-4 this year with the 2.89 ERA, and he's not going to strike out a whole lot of guys. But what have you seen from
He's
him so
efficient.
far? Yeah, he's been very efficient. He's been very consistent too, is the big thing, which is what we need. With this offense, we need a 1-2 punch or a 1-2-3 punch that can really, doesn't need to, dominate every single outing, but just needs to give us a consistent performance. And it seems like that's what Eflin's been doing. Do you have any other thoughts on Eflin or any of the other guys? I know Pivetta's shelved. Velasquez has been fighting some injury problems. He was put on the injury list. Velasquez was, with a strained right forearm. That was updated last week. They said he was supposed to return pretty soon. But actually, before we go on, I want to get your thoughts on the bullpen. Hector Neris has been the closer so far. 7 saves, 1.86 ERA. David Robertson's been struggling with some injuries. Sir Anthony Dominguez, I think he's been a train wreck. I really don't like
Yeah.
him. I know coming into the year, Gabe wanted to do like a closer by demand. I read that somewhere. I didn't think that was a brilliant idea. But some other guy, I think Pat Neshek, Morgan, and Neris have really been impressive. And besides that, it's really been a toss-up. What have your thoughts been so far, the first 46-plus games as far as the bullpen's concerned?
I think Gabe's handled it better than he did last year. And I think I like the way that he's using Hector. He's trusting him to use him in the ninth. And I think a couple of days ago he used him for a sys out save. And I think that's telling that he trusts him as his go-to guy in the ninth inning as the closer. Because he could have easily took him out and put in Neshek, who was warming up that inning, and put him in. Instead, he left him in for a sys out save. So I think he's the closer, but maybe not the official closer, but he, I think he is the obvious closer right now. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it seems like everybody's kind of fitting into their roles. I would hate to have, I mean, Velasquez has such good stuff, but I would hate to have a guy come back and kind of screw up everybody's roles. But it seems like, you know, once the offense gets going, I think once the weather consistently warms up, which it's starting to do, you know, here, you know, back in the, you know, the, you know, in the Philadelphia region, I think the lineup will start to produce consistently. I think Nola, you know, which is, you know, obviously that we didn't expect it, but he's kind of been the X factor that we hope comes around. I think he's expected to make a turnaround. I don't foresee him putting on this, you know, this type of outing, this type of performance, I should say, throughout the whole season where he's only coming in for 5 or 6 innings. I think he's a guy that can, you know, that can add more strength and bolster, as an ace should do, your rotation. So I think next week we'll get into, since next week it'll be closer to a third of the season, we'll get our grades for, you know, for each part of the team. But before we switch topics, I want to get your thoughts. I mentioned Kapler briefly about his thoughts coming into the season on the bullpen, but I want to get your thoughts on him overall. Obviously, I mentioned coming into the show that that we currently stand in first. What are your thoughts on Kapler as manager? Do you think he's done a good job? Do you think he's done enough to kind of keep us, you know, afloat ahead in the division race? Or do you think, you know, he's worth replacing in the off season?
I think he's done a solid job. I think he's improved it quite a bit in each of the stuff he needs to improve on. Obviously, the bullpen, I think he's done a little better job than last year, obviously, with not using so many closers this year so far, knock on wood. I think he's handled the pitching staff not the best way, but I think he's letting the starters pitch deep into games, maybe sometimes too much. I think he's handled the lineup pretty consistently. I think for the most part, it's been the same lineup every game, besides for a couple of injuries here and there. But Harper's played, he's sitting in the third spot every game besides one, because he wanted to see, to try and help Harper get up, I mean, get his hitting going, so he put him in the two hole last week. But other than that, I think he's been solid, and I think if we make the playoffs this year, I think he deserves to be here next year. If we miss it by like 5 games or 6 games, and if we collapse again, then maybe he is worth replacing. But as of right now, I think he's done a solid and fair job.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because obviously you don't know ahead of time who's going to be fired in the off season, so you don't know the full, you don't have a full realm, you don't have the full idea of what the list of available head coaches or managers will be in the off season if you decide to let Kapler go. Obviously, the Sixers were kind of fighting that with Brown, and I think they kind of realized, I don't want to go off. Too off topic, but my point is sometimes, you know, if you fire a guy who's, you know, not the best candidate, you might end up with, you know, an even worse candidate as his replacement. So while I'm not a huge Kapler fan, I think it's worth holding on to him and seeing that the players have kind of responded to him. And, you know, sometimes you want a player manager, you know, sometimes you want a guy that that gives it to you straightforward, like a Larry Boa type of guy. But you know, we'll see what happens. So, and last time I checked, it was still 1-0 in Chicago. So we'll switch sports for a little bit. We'll switch to the NBA playoffs, which is currently in the conference finals. Warriors and the Trailblazers are actually playing tonight, and they're playing in Portland, and they're tied 48 all with 4.5 minutes left in the first half. Golden State lead the series 3-0 with a chance to clinch the series and head to their fifth straight NBA Finals appearance, which is crazy. Fifth consecutive one, which I don't think has happened for a team since the 50s, 60s Celtics. And back then, obviously, the amount of teams was, you know, was very limited compared to now. So it's just crazy nowadays with free agency in sports, and you have a team that, you know, they have talent. They've kept, you know, the same guys minus Durant. The core of their team has stayed together. The coach has stayed there, Steve Kerr, and obviously why wouldn't he? So what do you make of this Warriors dynasty? Trailblazers are leading now, but Warriors have a chance to clinch tonight. If they clinch, obviously the other series is still going on. Milwaukee leads that 2-1 with a chance to go up 3-1. That game four
tomorrow night
series is tomorrow night, correct, in Toronto. So, you know, Warriors, if they clinch tonight, they'll have some good amount of days for rest, and they're kind of
at least a week.
Yeah, they'll have at least a week, and Durant will have time, you know, probably most importantly, more time to rest before a game one of the NBA Finals starts, assuming Golden State advances. So I'm not sure if you've watched this series, but Golden State's, you know, really put it to them really strong. Portland's, the last couple games, Portland has developed some pretty big leads. In game three, I believe at one point I was watching it, they had I think it was a 15-point lead over Golden State, and Golden State came back and won by 11. So obviously over a 25-point swing. So do you have any thoughts on this current Golden State dynasty that's been going on?
I think, to be honest, I think the Warriors are actually better with Durant, without Durant. And I think if Durant comes back, I think it could ruin that chemistry. I think Golden State needs to hope that he doesn't come back. I know that sounds crazy because Kevin Durant is a great player, but to me, I think they are a better team. I mean, they did win 73 games without him. I mean, I know they lost that finals, but and they did win the finals without him too. So it's not like they can't win without him. I think Kevin Durant's gotten after this season anyway. I think when he's the Knicks or the Nets joining forces without Kyrie, but. But that's not here or there right now. But as far as the Warriors, I think they're on their way to, it will be 4 titles in 5 years, something like that.
Correct. Yeah. Yep.
That,
so
we haven't
seen
that
since. Despite the fact that Draymond and Curry, they seem to have more than just like a cordial relationship. They seem like they have a close friendship with Durant, but you think that he actually hinders their chances of winning. You think he's actually a detriment to their lineup when he's in the lineup?
I wouldn't say detriment. I would say maybe. I think Curry. Maybe not a distraction. I think just this year, because he got injured, I think the Warriors found a different chemistry together. I think Curry's gotten better without him. Stephen Curry struggled the first couple series without when he was in the lineup. And I think without him, Curry becomes the man of that team. He becomes a leading scorer. Curry plays better without him, if that makes sense. Even though they do play good together, I think Curry is kind of better without him. It's kind of like Ben Simmons. I think he plays better without Embiid in the lineup because Embiid is the focus point and Simmons is like the background. You know what I'm saying? I think.
Yeah, honestly, I honestly think that even though Curry's the MVP and even though some other guys have contributed, obviously Iguodala has a Finals MVP. Klay has scored over 60 points in a game. Honestly, Draymond is just as valuable. You saw when he was suspended in that first Cleveland series in the finals several years ago, the only one that Kerr has lost as a coach. Yeah, when they blew that 3-1 series lead to LeBron and the Cavs, when Draymond got suspended, they lost all that momentum. I think Draymond's kind of the glue of that team because if you think about it, you have all these shooters. Now, don't get me wrong, Durant can post up. He can shoot a three. He's kind of like the baseball equivalent of a five. He's kind of the basketball equivalent of a baseball five-tool player where he can shoot a three. You know, he has good interior defense. You know, he can pretty much do it all. And that's why he's,
yep.
You know, certain to get a good price tag and get a good amount of money on the free agent market this offseason, like you mentioned, with the Knicks or, you know, whether it be the Warriors or wherever he goes. But I think Draymond is kind of, you know, a guy
heart and soul of that team.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yeah, he's kind of the heart and soul of that team. The Steph's the guy that, you know, you really look at. Everybody kind of has their roles, and that's kind of what I was referring to earlier with, you know, with the Phillies as well. You know, if guys come in and you know, the starter doesn't have to pitch 9 innings every night, but it's just about it pretty much applies to every sport where if you fulfill your role successfully and if you do your job, I hate to quote Bill Belichick, but if you do your job, you know, then everything, you know, should go as planned. So, you know, honestly, you know, the interesting thing is how much Durant will get in this market coming up because there's, you know, so many players that are going to be out there. Jimmy Butler is going to be a free agent too, but we'll talk more about that later. But one thing I do want to get to, aside from this series, like I mentioned, the other series going on in the East is the Bucks-Raptors series. The Bucks are the number one seed. Toronto's the number three seed, I believe. And I think four is tomorrow night. And that game is at 8:30, and that's the East Finals on TNT. I'm not sure if you've been watching that series so far, but do you have any thoughts on that so far?
I haven't been watching it closely, but I watched a little bit. I had it on yesterday. There wasn't really anything on, so I had it on. So, but I've been keeping an eye on the scores and stuff, so I know a little bit. Kawhi had a big game last night. So did Siakam. He went to double overtime, and in Toronto's. Snuck out with a win. I think they could tie the series tomorrow. I think the series could go 6 or 7. And I think the advantage for the Warriors because I think the Warriors are going to finish off the Blazers tonight. So they're going to have at least a week and a half off.
Yeah, I think Gasol and Lowry, Marcus Gasol and Kyle Lowry had important games in that game three. Last night in that double overtime thriller in Toronto. Lowry's kind of the unsung hero. Obviously, we saw, you know, how much heart that Gasol has when he was, hugging Embiid after the thrilling Game 7 loss last series in that Sixers series. And he is a guy that can post up, and he can also shoot too. So, you know, I thought Leonard was impressive. I don't think it was his greatest performance, but he certainly proved it from the free throw line, 12 of 13 from the free throw line, and he chipped in with 9 rebounds and 5 assists. And in 52 minutes of play, he only had 5 turnovers and was a plus 10. This is Leonard, and he had 36 points. Let me ask you this. Game 3 aside, even though Milwaukee is playing in Toronto, Toronto has the advantage, obviously, of being at home the next game, and they're trying to even the series. What do you think Toronto needs to do to even the series? And what do you think Milwaukee needs to do to take the 3-1 series lead? What would you say the keys are for both teams for Game 4 tomorrow night in Toronto?
I think the keys are, I think Kawhi needs to obviously be the, needs to carry them. And I think, as you said, Kyle Lowry and Gasol need to have big games. As far as Milwaukee, I think Giannis has to have a better scoring game. I think he only had 12 points last night. We got like 24 rebounds, I believe. I think he needs to take over that game. I think he needs to score at will. I think they need more consistent points from him. And I think the role players like Bledsoe and Middleton, they need to do better too. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Looking over the stats, Milwaukee didn't shoot that well. Neither team really did, but some of Milwaukee's stars, including Middleton, including the Greek Freak. Greek Freak had 23 rebounds in 45 minutes. 20 out of his 23 rebounds were defensively. He only had 12 points in over 40 minutes. He was only 2 for 7 from the free throw line and 0 for 3 from 3. Milwaukee just—it seemed like they. I was watching bits and pieces of that game, and they threw up some bad shots. So, I think first and foremost, keys to the game for both teams for Milwaukee, shot selection will be huge. Second chance points for Toronto, because obviously Milwaukee is so stacked, and I think so. Oversized in comparison. I think they have the advantage. I think Toronto has some better shooters from the perimeter, but I think they'll be, you know, if they want to come inside or if they want to, you know, take some shots, you know, they're going to have to be careful and prepare for second chance rebounds or second chance points, I mean, and snag some rebounds. So, I see. It's interesting because both teams are pretty even. I think Toronto probably wins that game, but I wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee won by a couple points. It should be pretty interesting. So Milwaukee is actually favored by 2 points, and the over-under is 216. And while we're at it, the game on tonight is actually nearing halftime. Trailblazers are leading again at half. It's currently 69-65 Portland at half. And in that game, Thompson's 5-for-11. Curry is shooting 7-for-9. But Draymond Green only has 3 field goal attempts. Some of the Trailblazers seem like they're being a little bit more aggressive. I watched the beginning of that game, and even though the rebounds are both 17 all, it seems like Golden State needs to be a little bit more aggressive early on. One quick thing before we switch to hockey. Phillies have taken a 3-1 lead in their game versus Chicago. Cesar Hernandez has two RBIs, as does JT Realmuto has an RBI as well. So we'll keep you posted on that. And the the bottom of the sixth inning is 3-1 Phillies. So we'll switch over to some hockey. It's been an interesting playoffs. Flyers are not in it again, but I know you're not a big hockey guy, but I really haven't watched that many series and games so far, but I was able to catch that the game the other day, and what was it, Sharks and Blues, I think. And, and the Sharks guy got away with a hand pass that led to a secondary assist. That was pretty interesting. I'm not sure if you caught that, but the referee missed a hand pass, and the pass led to the guy that was on the strong side of the Blues goalie, and he passed it to the guy on the opposite side. I don't have names off the top of my head, but I saw the clip and it was pretty interesting how the refs were able to miss that one. But have you caught any games so far?
I caught a little bit of yesterday's game. It was 5-0, so I caught a little bit of it. My buddy Doug, who's been on the show before, he's a huge Sharks fan, so I'm kind of rooting for the Sharks, but I wouldn't mind seeing the Blues in the Cup Finals either. So I think both teams could give Boston a run, but I think Boston right now is probably, I don't know if it's safe to say because you never know in hockey, so, but I think they are the favorites to win the Cup. I picked them to win the Cup in the beginning of the playoffs, but I was hoping I was going to be wrong, but they have been dominating since the first round.
Yeah. So, in their series, Blues and Sharks, Blues shut out San Jose 5-0 yesterday, and Blues are on the brink now. I believe if the Blues win the next game, which is tomorrow night, tomorrow night in St. Louis, I believe. It's tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Yeah, they'll make their first Cup Finals appearance since, I believe, 1969.
Wow.
They made it three straight years. It's been right around 50 years since they made their last Cup appearance, and they never won one. And the Sharks are looking to get back in that series. So Bruins will be waiting for them. Should be interesting to see what happens.
The Bruins have a long layoff, too.
They have a long layoff. If necessary, Game 7 in that Western Conference final series.
Thursday.
It's Thursday at 9 p.m. on NBCSN. And then next week is the next Monday is the start of the Stanley Cup Finals in Boston, I believe, at 8 p.m. So it should be pretty interesting. So since I haven't really watched a whole lot of hockey, we'll kind of skip over hockey and we'll head over to some Eagles talk. Unless you had some final thoughts on the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, I just I know the series is not over, but I'm gonna just predict that I think the Bruins will win the Stanley Cup. I think if they face the Sharks, I think they'll beat them in probably five or six. And I think if they play the Blues, I think it'll probably be I could see the Blues and Bruins going to seven. Do you have any predictions on that? Do you agree that the Bruins are going to win the Cup?
I think the Blues have a better shot of beating the Bruins.
I agree with that.
I think it's going to be I think it could go minimum of six games. I think it's going to be Blues facing the Bruins. And I think it could go seven. We'll wait and see on that to see if the Blues advance, and then we can make our predictions. But we'll get into some Eagles talk. It's been an interesting off season. We talked about it last week a little bit, but today NFL beat reporter Ian Rappaport reported on NFL.com that there will be, quote, no limitations for Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz in OTAs this year with his back injury. According to a Rappaport, the Eagles will be smart with their franchise quarterback. I'm quoting, kind of paraphrasing here what the article said, but that Wentz is expected to be involved in the majority of all the work in OTAs. Speaking several weeks ago in a presser, Wentz had said that he was not yet fully healed from the injury, but it looks like as time goes on, you know, he'll get some work in with the mandatory mini camp. I'll take a look at some of the dates coming up, but I wanted to get your thoughts before I do so on Wentz's injury, on his limitations. Speak on all that. Do you think that he'll be okay come the start of week one? Do you think he'll be his old MVP caliber self from a couple of years ago? What are your thoughts on this whole Wentz saga as far as his injury is concerned?
I mean, I do have my concerns, as any other fan would have, but I think he's going to have a great season this year. So, as long as he stays healthy, obviously, I compare him to Embiid. I think Embiid is the same way. They're both franchise players. They both need to stay. They both have health concerns, health history, obviously. But I think when they're both healthy, they're both great. And I think Carson Wentz can have an MVP type year, and he can lead the Eagles to the promised land, and hopefully another title. And I think he can stay healthy this year.
So do you think there's a good shot that he plays all 16 games?
I'll say, if I had to put a percentage on it, I would say it's 60-40. Just because of the health history. I don't wanna say it's fully. You can do that, but I think it's 60-40 right now. He just needs to prove that he can play all 16 games. So, I think he can.
Well, he's gonna have some. You know, he's gonna have some return guys. He's gonna have some weapons. You know, it's gonna be interesting. You know, obviously you get Deshaun Jackson back. You know, we'll talk about some of the other guys because one thing I want to touch on the other side of the ball, the Chris Long situation, fan favorite and Super Bowl champion, one of the members on the team, Chris Long, and the Walter Payton 2018 NFL Man of the Year from the Eagles just retired recently yesterday. So, in a minute, I'll get your thoughts on that. But obviously, this off season, almost a couple months ago, we traded a sixth round pick in the 2020 NFL draft to the Bears that could potentially be a fifth round pick in exchange for running back Jordan Howard, who was a fifth round pick a few years ago, was a Pro Bowl a couple years ago. And then made a couple rookie teams for the Pro Football Writers Association for his career. You know, he's been a, you know, not an every down back, but he had a very impressive rookie year, over 1,300 yards, averaged over 5 yards a carry, 5.2 yards per carry. 1,313 rushing yards in 2016, his rookie year, 6 rushing touchdowns, had some receptions almost 300 receiving yards. And then he had over 1,000 rushing yards 2 years ago, and then his load was kind of lightened the last couple of years, down from his rookie year. What are your thoughts? I'm not sure if you got to look at some tape from seeing Bears games versus the Eagles of Jordan Howard, but from what you've looked up about him, your research, your tape on him, what are your thoughts on the Eagles' acquisition last March of Jordan Howard from the Bears?
I think Jordan Howard is going to be a solid player. I think it was a steal for what we got for him. You said we gave up a fifth-round pick, right?
It was a sixth-round pick, but it could be a fifth-round pick. It's a conditional pick. I think it depends on if we make the playoffs or not. I'll have to check on that. But, yeah, it's for now, it's a sixth-rounder.
I think that's a major steal. I think – I don't know what the Bears were thinking there, but he's ours now, so I think he's going to have a solid – I think behind our offensive line, I think he can reach 1,000 yards. I think the Bears gave up on him too soon. I think he has the potential to be a solid running back in this league. And with the rookie that we got, Robinson, from Penn State, I think they can be a good 1-2 punch in this league, because I think we need two solid running backs in the league now, because most teams have a good 1-2 punch. So I think he's going to benefit playing here. I think he's going to I think he can get 5+ touchdowns this year. I think he's going to be a good clubhouse guy. Good addition to the team. I think he can replace Jay Ajayi as that big power back. So, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think we have a lot to work with at halfback. You know, we got some guys that were drafted, some guys that were brought in. You know, through the draft, you know, we picked up some guys early on, and like Miles Sanders, he was the second round pick, 53rd overall, out of Penn State, and you know, it'd be interesting to see, you know, what goes on with him, because at running back, obviously you have some guys, you know, that are mostly special teams. A guy that was like Darren Sproles, who can occasionally, you know, have a few reps, but, you know, is mostly a special teams guy. And then you have like an every down back, like a LeSean McCoy. And then you have a guy that can, you know, kind of do it all, kind of like a Brian Westbrook kind of guy. So you have different degrees, what I call it, of running back. So I don't know a whole lot about Miles Sanders. You know, a 22-year-old guy, he's pretty undersized. He's only 5'11", but they thought pretty highly of him to draft him that high. Obviously, you know, with the addition of Howard, Wendell Smallwood still in the fold. I'm not sure what their plans on for him. Obviously, the local kid out of Glassboro, Corey Clement, Josh Adams is injured. He's expected to miss the off-season program because of off-season shoulder surgery because of a torn labrum. And last year's playoffs. We have Donnell Pumphrey, and then we have we also signed this offseason. Actually, we signed late last year running back Boston Scott off of practice squad at the Saints. So we have a lot of pieces to work with. And then you add into the fold, you know, some of the other guys we added through the free agency and trade markets, like DeSean Jackson, who obviously has some familiarity here. And you mentioned a couple minutes ago the Jordan Howard trade as being a steal. The DeSean Jackson trade was only for, I believe, a fifth-round pick. So you're getting some value in return, and obviously Wentz is going to return. So overall, if you look at the starters, Wentz, be interesting to see who they start as the first running back, but they have it listed as Sanders on the depth chart. But then you have Howard, the third running back is Smallwood, Jeffrey, Deshaun, Aguilar. There was talk of Aguilar being traded. We'll get to that in a minute. Zach Ertz, Peters, Isaac Seumalo, Kelsey, Brandon Brooks, who is on the injury list, but he was in a 6 to 8 month timetable injury return after tearing his Achilles in last year's divisional round versus New Orleans. And then you have Lane Johnson, and obviously, you know, we'll see where the pieces fit in from there. But overall, what are your thoughts on the offense? Some of the guys I can mention, you can piece in for Darren Sproles, who I'm not sure if he ever officially retired or not. You can piece in at special teams. Some guys can be every down back. But are you satisfied with the offense? What are your overall thoughts on it?
Yeah. I am satisfied with the offense. I think they can be a top five, top eight offense in the league. I think they can score points. I think as I mentioned, I think Carson Wentz is gonna have an MVP type year. Barring injuries, of course. I think Howard is gonna be a good addition, and I think Sanders is gonna be. I think he can play good. So I think I don't know if they're going to use him right away. I don't know if they're going to slowly put him in the games, or are they just going to throw him out there. It'll be interesting to see how Peterson uses him and how he becomes an impact on the team right away, or they slowly move him into the role. What do you think they will do about Sanders?
Yeah, I think they're going to kind of inch him in. They have enough veterans here that, you know, to kind of ease his comfort level and to ease his workload, too. He's not going to be a guy that needs to be an every-down guy, you know, based on the type of guys that I threw out there. Obviously, some guys may be injured, but, you know, obviously we're still a little bit over several months away from the start of the season, so I'm not too worried about you know what he'll do this year. I'm more focused on guys on the offensive line staying healthy. So I want to get to real quick before we get to the you know some other news with the team. Some more pressing news. This past Saturday, one of the Eagles captains, a member of the Eagles, 2018 Super Bowl champion team, and one of the defensive ends, members of the team for several years, and the son of Howie Long, who's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Eagles defensive end Chris Long announced his retirement after 11 years in the league this past Saturday. Eagles put him on the retired list, and they did that this afternoon, which actually freed up by putting Long on the team retired list. They freed up $5.3 million in cap space on the salary cap. The Eagles will incur, this is according to NJ.com, the Eagles will incur a $300,000 dead money penalty due to prorated bonuses in his contract. So, for the most part, we'll save, you know, a good chunk of change, over $5 million. And coming into Long's retirement decision on Saturday, they had just under $22 million saved over the cap. So, you know, it'd be pretty interesting now. He took to social media to announce it. And, you know, he's obviously, you know, spent a couple seasons here, helped us win our first Super Bowl title after signing with the team in 2017. It was his second Super Bowl title, in back-to-back seasons after winning one with the Patriots. Long spent his first 8 seasons with the member as a member of the Rams, back then known as St. Louis Rams, before they relocated to Los Angeles. And he was the second overall pick in the 08 draft. 70 career sacks and 15 forced fumbles. With Long off the books now, with some money freed up, we still have Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, Vinny Curry, Josh Sweat, Deshaun Hall, Joe Osman, and fourth-round pick Sharif Miller, all currently on the roster as of now at defensive end. So, one, I want to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts on the Chris Long retirement announcement? And two, what are your thoughts on the team's defensive end position going forward as a unit?
I just want to say thank you to Chris Long for being a good player and even a better man. And I hope he enjoys his retirement. And I think he's going to be fairly missed on this team because I think he was the leader on that team, especially his defense. And I think Fletcher Cox and him were good friends. I think Fletcher has learned a lot from him for being a leader. So I think he's going to benefit from this. And I think Fletcher is going to be more of a leader this year. And as far as the defense end, I think it's going to be solid. I think it's going to be solid. I think it just needs to. I think Barnett is coming off an injury, right?
I think he had some injury problems last year, but he played through it. Unlike some other players who opted for surgery, and some guys opted to have their surgery in the off season, but. I think he struggled with some problems, not too severe, I don't think, during the season.
I think Barnett is going to bounce back this year.
Barnett is one of the guys that I think he's going to be one of the guys that's expected to have a huge season, one of the better defensive players. So it should be pretty interesting to see what happens. In a couple minutes, we'll get to our Twitter mailbag and answer a few questions from people that tweeted at the podcast on Twitter. There was one more interesting piece of news, and this time from the front office. Eagles VP, Vice President of Player Personnel, Joe Douglas, is reported to be number one on the New York Jets list of general managers list. This is according to The Athletic and ESPN's Adam Schefter. Obviously, Douglas has played a vital role here with the Eagles and has been a big part of our success, both as a member of the Super Bowl winning team and before and after that, as he worked with Adam Gase as well when he was with Chicago. So he's been linked to New York, so we'll keep our eye on that. That would be a huge loss for the Eagles. We obviously wish him the best of luck. We obviously wish, like Eric said, Chris Long, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the man of the year last year, Walter Payton man of the year for the NFL last year, the best of luck moving forward with his future endeavors. So, should be pretty interesting to see what happens with that. So, one last thing before we get to our mailbag. I wanted to get to a couple of signings. Last week, we locked up a few players, which was important. Stefan Wisniewski was signed for a 1-year, $1.5 million contract. He declined. I'm sorry, we declined his option back in March. So he's re-signing for less money after failing to gain more interest on the open market. He started at least 6 games each of the last 3 seasons for us, but he will likely head into training camp in a backup role. Wisniewski will, behind Brandon Brooks, who's now healthy after after his Achilles problem this past year. So that was huge. We locked up second round pick and running back Miles Sanders to a 4-year deal, rookie deal. And so we also signed second round wide receiver, second round pick wide receiver J.J. or C.J. Whiteside to a 4-year deal. One thing I want to ask you before we move forward, do you foresee Wentz is locked up? I'll have to look at the contract. I think it's for a couple of years. He's locked up. Might be, I believe it's still in this rookie deal for at least another year or two. But I know they're trying to get a deal done. Do you see the Eagles management, Howie specifically, and Carson and his agent getting a deal, a long-term deal done soon? And what do you see happening with that?
I think they need to maybe. Do I think they're gonna sign him for the season?
Yeah.
I think that might happen actually, but if I were them, I think I would wait until after next season. Just to, it's hard to say because I don't want to.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword because he's one of the most talented players in the league, but you know, he's yet to play a full year. He has actually 2 more years left on his deal. I just looked this upcoming season and next year, the 2020 season. And his cap hit for this upcoming season is $8.4 million, and then it's $22.7 million in 2020. So over the next 2 years, he's slated to make over $30 million in just cap alone, not including bonuses or incentives or anything. I do foresee Carson and his representation and management striking a deal pretty soon. He's 26 now, obviously, very bright future. We all know what he can do, so it'd be interesting to see what happens with that. So we'll start with the new segment we're introducing. We had it before, but we're now introducing it as the Twitter mailbag. We introduced it in the past, so you can tweet us, and we have the Philly Sports Passion podcast on Twitter. You can tweet us at Philly SPP Podcast. That's at Philly SP Podcast. And some of the questions that we had tweeted out to us, regardless of topic, this one comes from Into the Shift Podcast, which is at Into the Shift Pod. And she asks, who has been the Phillies' most important off-season addition through the first quarter of this season so far? I'll throw that to you, Eric, first. Who do you think has been the most important off-season addition for the Phillies?
I think it has been Jean Segura. I think he's been the folk. I think he's been the solid guy in the lineup. I think he makes his lineup go. And as we saw when he was not in the lineup, this team was under 500. So I think he is right now the MVP of this team. I like how he's patient at the plate. I like how he gets on base and he can steal bases when he needs to. I think he can. He's a good base runner. He's a smart base runner. I think he's a good fielder. Underrated, I think. I think he's an underrated shortstop. There's a lot of great shortstops in the game today. I don't think he gets enough recognition, to be honest. Maybe I'm just being a little biased, but I really don't think he gets enough recognition.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I would like him to be. Honestly, my heart wants to say Harper, but my gut is telling me to go with Segura. I'm going to go with Segura just because he's hitting so well. Harper has been their best power hitter, arguably. But Segura, obviously, you know, had the injury there. But he only has 2 stolen bases, only has 8 walks. Fielding percentage isn't great. He's been a little bit better in the past, more consistent. But I kind of agree with you as far as his personality on and off the field. He's kind of an ignition. He kind of sparks the lineup. He kind of reminds me of Jimmy Rollins, and you know, for that he's really been impressive so far. Several years ago with Arizona, because he's for a guy that's been a career .288 hitter and has made a couple All-Star teams. He's kind of bounced around. He's been with 5 teams, and he's been in both the National League and the American League. He's been with Milwaukee, Seattle, Arizona, Los Angeles, Angels of Anaheim, and now the Phillies. And you know, I really like that. You know, that trade. J.P. Crawford, you know, was obviously a highly touted prospect, and you know, the 16th overall pick, but he hasn't really panned out so far. And I like what I see from Segura, and you know, he's under contract after, not including this year, for 4 more years. So he'll be here, you know, probably until his mid-30s, unless he gets traded, and you know, he has incentives. So if he continues the production at the top of the order, he's the type of guy that can hit, you know, for average, it can have 190, 200 hits. He actually led the league in 2016 in hits with Arizona. So he's that type of guy that, you know, the one thing I do want him to be a little bit more aggressive about. I think the injury might have been hampering that a little bit. I can understand that. But for the last, you know, 110 games of the season, I would like him to, you know, see him, you know, it would be nice if he ended the season with, he only has 2 stolen bases. So if he ended the season with 25 to 30 stolen bases minimum, you know, obviously he would, you know, he would show that he was putting his speed to good use. So that's the first question. We'll get into 2 more. This also comes from Into the Shift podcast at Into the Shift Pod on Twitter. And their question, their second question is, over under 4 wins against the Cubs and the Brewers this week. I'll throw it to you first. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they can get 4, a solid 4. I think they can split the Cubs. And I think going facing Milwaukee again, I think they can get a little payback for them, payback against the Brewers. The Brewers are not like unbeatable. They are beatable. They just faced the Brewers when they were hitting, and y'all saw the Brewers lost the series against the Braves. So I think we can beat. Take 2 out of 3 from the Brewers, and take 2 games out from them, and go 4-3 on this trip before we face St. Louis next week. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we had the, you know, we had the 4-game road trip that started tonight. Phillies are still playing that. That was an 8:05 start in Wrigley, like I mentioned, and then they have tomorrow and Wednesday, and Thursday. They typically have road. They typically have Thursday games off, but since it's a 4-game series, it stretches out. I actually like that they don't have the day off. I think they need to get in rhythm. I could see them winning on the 7-game road trip before they come home for St. Louis. I could actually see them winning at least 5 games. They're winning tonight, last time I checked.
Top of the 8th.
Bottom of the 8th, 3-1 game, bottom of the 8th, yeah. And, you know, guys are starting to get healthy. Like we just mentioned, Segura is starting to get in the rhythm. Harper's been catching fire as of late. He's had multiple multi-hit games the past couple of games. They're in first place. They got it, you know, obviously they're still playing a baseball the rest of the summer to play, but, you know, they've got an incentive now. You know, you can look at it, you know, from, you know, one of the players or a guy that was around when the team was not so successful, and you can say to yourself and to your teammates that were either, you know, in the minor leagues or weren't around, you know, hey, we were a 60 to 70 win, you know, team in the past 4 or 5 years. We really haven't been a contender since 2011, and now we're starting to pick up where we left off, you know, from those teams that 2020, let me just put it like this, right? From 07 to 2011, you know, they didn't, besides Hamels, they didn't have great pitching until they got Halladay and Lee. So the first couple of years when they won those division titles in 07 and 08, obviously winning the World Series in 08, they relied mostly on their offense. And my point being, now that they have the pieces in place and they have some pitching and they have Harper and they have Hoskins and they have Segura and Kutch once he gets healthy, I think they can start building those building blocks and putting everything together for a winning foundation and being successful in the long run. So, you know, it wouldn't be out of the question for them to win 5 games on this road trip. Chicago and Milwaukee are both good teams, but, you play to win the game. You know, they have some night games for the most part, so it should be pretty interesting to see. So the last couple of nights, the bullpen's been holding out really strong, and the last 3 games have been decided by 2 runs or less. So, you know, it should be pretty interesting to see what happens over this 7-game stretch. So one last question on Twitter that we'll get to from the mailbag. You can tweet us at Philly ST Podcast at Twitter for the Philly Sports Passion Podcast for reading the mailbag on the show. And this tweet / question comes from the Headlock Talk account at Headlock Talk. And she asks, are the Phillies ready to make a World Series run this year? I'll throw that to you first, Eric. What are your thoughts on the Phillies going forward for the rest of the year? After tonight, they have 114 games remaining on the schedule. What are your thoughts?
I wouldn't necessarily say a World Series run, but if they get another starter like Madison Bumgarner or something, if they want to be aggressive and get him, then I can see them making a run. But I think the Dodgers are clearly the favorite in the National League right now, and they're just above everybody. And we're playing them next week or 2 weeks from now. That's going to be a real test. I think the Cubs are and the Phillies are about the same, so are the Brewers. So, can they make a run? Yeah, I mean, if they get another pitcher, because anything can happen in baseball if we just get hot. Right now, I'll say no. How about you?
Yeah, they traveled to Chavez Ravine in L.A. for a trip with the Dodgers on the 31st, so less than 2 weeks from now, they'll be there. So you figure, you know, in the next 2 weeks, they'll play the Cubs. They'll play at the Cubs, at Milwaukee, and at the Dodgers, who I believe, if the playoffs started today, all three of those teams, excluding us, would make the playoffs. The Dodgers are leading the West by a healthy stretch, by 5.5 games over Arizona. The Cubs actually have a similar record, like you mentioned, to us. The Cubs are actually a game better than us, same amount of wins, but 2 fewer losses. And we lead the East. So if the playoffs started today, we would actually play the Cubs in the playoffs because the Dodgers had the best record, and they would play, I believe, the winner of Milwaukee and whoever wins the tie. tiebreaker between Arizona. There are several teams with the same record, so the Braves and Arizona are in it, and Pittsburgh is in it as well for the wild card spot. So, you know, it should be interesting to see what happens. But I kind of look at it as 07 all over again. You know, you have a power hitting first baseman, Ryan Howard, Rhys Hoskins. You know, you have a guy at second with some speed. You have some power in the outfield. You have an ace that can give you 7 to 8 innings and, you know, 3 runs or fewer allowed. And then outside of the ace and Hamels slash Nola, you know, it's kind of a toss-up. Like I mentioned, Arrieta, you know, he's had some good games, some stretch of solid outings.
He had a good game today, so.
Yeah, you know, he's played, you know, well tonight, but he's kind of been a toss-up, and F1 has been, you know, solid, but, you know, coming into this year, he's been, you know, horrific coming into 2019. F1 was a career 15-18 with a 5.10 career ERA, but he's hopefully turned it around, and so it should be pretty interesting, and you have a manager who's a little less experienced compared to Manuel, but I see it as a team that's kind of growing, so should be pretty interesting to see what happens. So, you know, I think this team has a lot of promise as they start to get healthy, as McCutchen comes back. You know, I think the manager will kind of learn from his mistake, as the team does, as a team. I think they have a good blend of experienced guys that's like Harper and McCutchen, Segura, and, you know, some of the younger guys like F1 that can kind of fill in the pieces for them and teach them. And obviously some of those guys, like I mentioned, also have, you know, postseason experience, Arrieta included. So I believe a couple of guys also have World Series experience, so that always helps. So it should be pretty interesting to see what happens. So you can always tweet us, live tweet us, either with a question or a comment during the show or before the show every Monday at 9:30 on Blog Talk Radio and on Stitcher. You can tweet us at the podcast, Philly Sports Passion Podcast, at Philly SP Podcast. And then you can also tweet us on our personal Twitter accounts, at Big E Jacinto. That's all caps, B-I-G, all caps, E, Jacinto, capital J, A-C-I-N-T-O. And then at my account, Kyle underscore Lux underscore. And then also on the main account, too, if you have any questions for the show. So if you have any questions, we read them toward the Twitter mailbag at the very end, and we'll try to get to as many of the questions as we can before the show ends. So, Eric, do you have any last-minute comments before we wrap up?
Just a score update. The Cubs took the lead 4-3. There was a misplay in the outfield by McCutchen and Odubel, and then there was an error at third, which allowed the third run to score, so Cubs lead 4-3. Other than that, it was a good show. Thank you, Kyle.
Absolutely, and you guys, like I mentioned, you know, reach us on iTunes, on Stitcher, and the Philly Sports Podcast, Philly Sports Passion Podcast on Twitter and Blog Talk Radio. For Eric Jacinto, this is Kyle Lutz. Thank you for listening.
Yep. Bye.